Welcome to this Christmas edition of In Your Company, the fortnightly business show on Cambridge 105, presented by me, Sam Davis. Let me start by saying that I hope this festive season is fulfilling all your Christmas wishes. And that's really what today's show is all about, talking to some of the businesses around Cambridge which play a role in delivering seasonal cheer in our city. Now, Christmas is the critical sales period for retailers nationwide and provides a sometimes uncomfortably clear indicator of the winners and losers arising from prevailing trends. For example, last year's Christmas retail season confirmed with stark clarity that, when it came to the pain of the financial crisis, we were not all in it together. Among the supermarket chains, the big winners were at the extremes of the demographic spectrum. Marks and Spencer's, Sainsbury's and Waitrose struck gold with free-range turkeys and Heston Blumenthal's candied orange Christmas puddings. While at the other end of the scale, financially squeezed shoppers headed to Iceland, Aldi and Lidl. Aldi's sales were up 18% in the 12 weeks to Christmas Day 2012, more than five times the growth seen in the rest of the market. So the Christmas sales period matters hugely, and no doubt the media will be devoting considerable time and energy to reading the runes of 2013's trading figures when they're released early next year. But, as we have discussed in interviews with several guests this year, Cambridge is operating in something of an economic bubble at the moment and is largely isolated from the woes which have been afflicting the rest of the country. So this show is going to concentrate on three stores which offer some of life's little luxuries. Whether you're after a glass of bubbly, a treat for the kids, or a veritable cornucopia of Xmas excess, our guests today can deliver it all. And in my household, after a morning spent turkey wrestling and sprout peeling, it's definitely the first of these that rates as the highest priority. So I went to meet Noel Young, owner of independent wine merchants Noel Young Wines in Trumpington, to gather a few recommendations and learn a little bit more about the significance of the Christmas period for his business.
Christmas time, mistletoe and wine, children singing.
Noel, thank you very much for seeing me today. Noel Young Wines was founded in 1991, I believe.
Correct.
And still going strong at the end of 2013. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I guess it's down to being fairly good at what we do. Otherwise, people wouldn't use us because there's obviously a huge amount of competition these days, a lot more so than when I first started. So I think we've obviously got a lot of customer loyalty, and I think we keep on trying to be innovative and make our choice and our selection new and different. So hopefully we're attracting new people as well along the line. So I think a combination of those things, you know, good wines, hopefully good service, reliable. That's it, I think, really.
Okay, well, that covers most of the bases. When you talk about innovation in wine, what kinds of things does that cover?
I mean, it's nothing like sort of, you know, technological innovation, but I think just, you know, never being scared to promote wines from different countries, different regions, you know, be it Greece or be it Austria or be it Tasmania or whatever, but, you know, just being you know, seduced by good quality wine wherever it comes from and then trying to promote that. But also I think, you know, we've got a lot of other initiatives in terms of the mixed cases we try and do. We're always trying to sort of package things up in different ways to encourage people to experiment without having to sort of spend a huge amount of money or overcommit themselves. And, you know, we offer just an absolutely incredible range of different mixed cases throughout the year that really do promote the lesser known regions along with the best known region. I think that's relatively innovative in its own way. I think there's anyone else really doing quite that level of mixing to try and encourage people to experiment, which is really what we're all about.
And the pricing for some of those mixed cases is very reasonable, isn't it? I mean, I think most people potentially just think about picking up a bottle of wine with their food shopping when they're in the supermarket, but you definitely cater across the whole price range.
Well, I think so, and it's been one of my biggest battles is to try and convince people that actually, you know, we have got really good and expensive wines, and it's great having a reputation for being good and for being premium, and I'd obviously much rather that than the other, but it's quite frustrating that people still see us as like a special occasion shop. You know, if we're having a dinner party or you know, whenever they want good wine they come to us, which is really nice, but we kind of need some of that everyday business as well. And I think, you know, I really strive hard to try and find it, and it's harder to find good wines at a lesser price point than it is to find good wines at a higher price point. So we really strive very hard at that, and we've again launched this wine club 12 months ago with Mixed Dozen starting at sort of less £6 something a bottle. So, you know, we are offering good wine at a good price. It's just a slow burner getting people to appreciate that.
Well, I'm very happy to provide an opportunity for you to plug your wares today. Thinking about the Christmas theme of this show, by the time this broadcasts, Christmas will have passed. But would you mind sharing with us what you would have recommended for a Christmas meal?
Lots.
Good starting point.
It all depends on budget, doesn't it? So, I mean, I think, you know, obviously a fizz of some description. If you're going to go champagne, then we'd have different recommendations at different price points. I think our house champagne, the Gallimard, which is 100% Pinot Noir, is fantastic value. Works out at around about £20 by the case. Got some very good sparkling wines, a really nice Prosecco from a winery called Frassinelli, which is... And Prosecco works well because it's not too sparkling and it's not too dry. So it's a very easy start to the day. White wine, well, generally I think you want wines with flavour. So if we're actually thinking cutting to the chase and going to the Christmas meal, then you need to have reds with a lot of flavour because you've got... There's very few dishes you actually have with so many flavours. If you're having a traditional Christmas dinner and you've got the poultry or the game bird, and then you've got stuffing and bread sauce and cranberry sauce and gravy and sausages and...
Brussels sprouts
and parsnips and carrots, and you know, you've got an awful lot of flavour there. And this is, I think, the Americans have probably got it right with their Thanksgiving. They like Zinfandel with their turkey, and I think that works really well because it's got a lovely brightness of fruit, a richness, and almost a sweetness of fruit that really works well with all those Christmassy flavours, but not really too heavy. So it's not as powerful, say, as a big, rich Australian Shiraz or a really spicy Chateauneuf de Pape. I think that works really well. I think really full, more New World, full-flavoured Pinot Noirs work well as well, because, again, you've got sweetness of fruit but not too much tannin, so you don't need anything with a lot of structure. You want something that's kind of fleshy and a lot of bright fruit. And white wine-wise, if you're going to use white wine, then you probably don't want anything as crisp or fresh as a Sauvignon Blanc, because I think that'd be a pretty hideous match. Although
he's wincing as he says that.
Well, it's each their own. If you want to have a Sauvignon Blanc with your turkey meal, then that's up to you. I can't have anything worse. So if I was going to serve a white, I'd look for something with some richness and some body and maybe even a little bit of sweetness, and people always go, ooh, sweetness. But if you think something like a Pinot Gris from New Zealand, don't spend a huge amount of money, but they've just got a weight of fruit and not too much acidity that I think works really well. Some of the sort of richer Chardonnays would work well.
Okay.
There you go.
Now, you taste, I gather, something in the region of 7,500 wines a year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you describe that as one of the upsides of your job or one of the downsides?
Both. You know, there was a time when going to trade tasting was really exciting, but it's actually really hard work and quite tiring. If you're going to taste 200 or 300 wines and write notes on them and keep focused the whole time, it's really quite challenging. So, you know, it's hugely important to sort of keep up with what's happening in the world of wine, to make sure your selection's always as good as it possibly can be. But increasingly, I find it harder work, I have to say. But, you know, there are sacrifices one has to do, and so good and bad.
In terms of the other part of your job, you're not just a wine seller, you're a wine maker in your own right, aren't you? So is that kind of what hits you after the Christmas rush? You then off to Australia?
Yeah, New Year's Eve I leave, so this year. So that's obviously nice because it means I'm heading to the Barossa Valley, so it's pretty hot. Get a bit of cricket in first, so I allow myself a couple of days off. Well, in fact, entertaining customers in Sydney, take them along to the cricket, which can either be good or bad for them. I have a feeling it might be good this year or next year, early next year. And then straight into the sort of blending. So I really enjoy that side of things. I mean, I thought the whole Australian venture is something I find very rewarding.
This is the Magpie Estate.
Yeah, exactly, which I co-own with a guy called Rolf Binder in the Barossa, which we've been doing for 20 years now. In fact, had some 20th anniversary dinners in Australia this year, which was fun but also slightly worrying. That's 20 years have gone by since we started. And, young men now.
You don't look a day over 70, Noel.
Oh, Christ. But no, that's really good fun. So no, I really do enjoy that. And there's something really good about, you know, coming up with an idea, going through the process of the actual production of the wine, and then putting the blend together, and then putting it in bottle, and people really liking it and getting good reviews and getting really favourable comments is as rewarding as it gets. So I really, really do enjoy that side of things.
And for anyone who has failed to purchase a Christmas present for a loved one and now needs to buy something to compensate, what would you point them to at the kind of top end of the market? What's a real grovelly apology present? Push the boat out here.
Well, I have to say, I'm a big fan of the luxury Tassinger champagne, Comte de Champagne. We're offering the 2004 and the 2005 for £99.95 and £125 respectively.
That sounds quite grovelly.
That is quite grovelly and bloody delicious as well.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Noel, for the recommendation, and I'll have to find someone who needs to apologise to me.
Now let's turn our attention to something more appropriate for the younger generation. While Father Christmas can generally be relied upon to work his magic, sometimes even his efforts need a top-up. And if that's the case, Cambridge is a great place to be, thanks to the existence of the Cambridge Toy Shop on Sussex Crescent, which will be celebrating its 10th anniversary in 2014. Despite the fact that Christmas is the busiest period in the store's calendar, founder Vivian Watson kindly stepped away from the shop floor for a few minutes to bring me up to date with their plans. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not.
The main reason for setting the store up actually was with two other friends of mine, and we had 10 children between us of all different ages. We decided that there wasn't really much of a choice in Cambridge in terms of children's toy shops. There was one independent and that was closing down. So we decided we'd do a shop online. And we had a coffee morning, bought all our toys online. And then some arrived, some didn't, some weren't what we were expecting at all, some were damaged. And we thought, there's got to be a better way than this. So we scooted down to London to the Toy Fair in January at Olympia. And we thought, yeah, we know there's loads of parents that want these toys, so let's do it. So we came back, saw a shop straight away and opened up.
You make that sound very straightforward. I'm sure it wasn't quite that easy. But you now stock over 9,000 toys, I gather.
Yes.
So the idea of being a child in a toy shop definitely applies here.
Oh, it's an absolute, you know, gold mine, really. It's lovely. You come in and it's children's eyes are sparkling as though, you know, we would if we went into a jeweller's, I think.
Do you have a particular philosophy behind the toys that you choose to stock?
We want to just please children and parents, and that's a fine line because parents have a very definite idea of what they'd like their children to play with, and children have a very definite idea. So we try, that's why we have the 9,000 lines. So we've got a huge breadth of stock, all sorts of different types of toys, from the very traditional to the new high-tech fashionable toys, and ranging from 30p to the sky's the limit.
Okay, well, maybe we'll come on to the sky's the limit in a minute. We're talking to you specifically in the context of Christmas. We're now in mid-December. How is your trading going this year, and how important is the Christmas season to you in terms of your year's trading?
It's very, very important. We moved here. I took the business on my own 3 years ago and moved to a shop twice the size. So it was a bit of a gamble, especially as the recession was kicking in. But I feel we're coming out of that now. We're having a fantastic Christmas this year, and it's going just very, very well.
And what are your big sellers then? What's going down well this Christmas?
I'd have to say that always our top toys are the good traditional things. So family games, Playmobil, imaginary play is good. Preschool toys, people come to us more and more for young babies. But we've also got some very funny, quirky things like Aquabots, which are robotic fish, and little nanobugs that climb up walls. Those are very popular for boys and girls. And we're concentrating on trying to find toys that older children like. So we're talking about young to mid-teenagers.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, my assumption would be that the age at which children stop wanting toys is falling because they're increasingly drawn towards screen-based entertainment. Is that something you feel you can counteract?
To a certain extent, I think children will still want that. Teenagers particularly will still want that aspect, the electronic toys, the PS3s, that sort of thing. But they're still children at heart, and I think there's still something in here that they would like. And my children are prime examples of that. I take things home for them, 14 and 18-year-old, and they get very hooked on whatever it is. So different types of games, Juggling is also very popular with teenagers. There's a big, big craze on that at the moment. So yo-yos, Diablos, devil sticks, and we have a professional juggling company that helps us stock all up.
You talked a little bit about launching a toy shop because you were disappointed with the performance of online sellers at the time. Do you think that environment has changed? I mean, Amazon has become such a all-encompassing organisation now. I think some people just have an instinct to go to Amazon to buy anything.
I think we're all guilty of that because it's so easy. It's so easy to do. And in many ways, they've got it right. But my concern is that they've got it so right that they are going to drive all the small businesses out of business. And then they will have the monopoly, and then we'll soon see that the prices increase.
That's not a pun, they'll have the monopoly.
So there's been quite a backlash against that, I think, over recent years. I think when we did our first internet shop, it was quite a new thing to do that. And there was a big rise, and now I think there's a bit of a fall, because we had a couple of Christmases where there were lots of snow and people didn't get their deliveries, and they were rushing into us at the last minute, and they felt really let down by that. So we did very well on that. And then this year, with the, well, the past 2 years, with all the emphasis that we've had in the city on Independence Week, etc., people are really supporting us. So there's a real backlash against buying online.
Well, that's great for you.
Yeah. And also people want to see the toys. They want to come in and play with them and see what they're like and to get advice. We have loads of grandparents coming in who say, I've forgotten what my children liked. What do they do at this age? What are they into? And we've got lots of mums that work here with children of all sorts of ages. And we've got lots of young teenagers who weren't playing with toys that long ago themselves. So, you know, they've really good advice. That's what we're strong on.
And you also mentioned the fallibility of online delivery companies in terms of actually getting the product to you. I gather that you have instituted a bicycle courier delivery system around the city.
Yes, we have. We're working with Outspoken Deliveries, who are just the most fantastic company. And we have a bike wrapped up in all our colours. And we do deliveries. So people, I think the thing is, people come into town, parking is so expensive, they don't want to stay long, and they don't want to be carrying around huge parcels. So we can deliver it for less than £3. We can deliver it out to them locally, and it's environmentally friendly. So we have some chap puffing away on a bike delivering, and we, as a speciality, is taking deliveries up to Addenbrookes, because a lot of people have contacted us and wanted things urgently for people up there for children. And so the last time they went up, they had this enormous teddy bear in the back trailer. So yes, it's lovely. It's a great asset.
Well, thank you very much for sparing the time to talk to us today, and good luck with the rest of the Christmas season.
Thank you.
My final interviewee today works for what is undoubtedly the biggest retailer on the Cambridge scene. And nobody does Christmas like John Lewis Partnership. But this can only be achieved with precision planning and a constantly evolving approach to maximising revenues and customer satisfaction. Eileen Hughes has worked in a variety of roles across the Cambridge store and will shortly be taking up her new responsibilities as operations manager. So she was in a great position to explain to me what it's really like at the centre of the John Lewis Christmas whirlwind.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree. For me.
Can we start by talking about how the Christmas season plays out in John Lewis in Cambridge? Yep. When do your preparations start?
Well, they start almost as soon as Christmas is finished. So immediately after Christmas, we will review our plans for this year. So we'll look at what went well, what we think we could improve on. And it starts in earnest, really, in the spring when we look at our trading hours. So our partners, that's our teams, decide on what our trading hours should be for the next Christmas. And that's done through our branch forum, where everybody has a say, everyone can have an input, where we try and balance commercial success with partner happiness as well.
Because the partnership basis within the John Lewis organisation is incredibly important, isn't it?
It's absolutely fundamental to who we are and how we do business. So our partners own the business, so they have a huge say in how their business is run. And we listen to their thoughts and we try and incorporate them as much as possible, because they know the business and we're looking to the long-term success all the time.
Okay, so returning to our timetable,
yep.
You agree the hours,
yep.
And then do you wait for head office to come back to you with this year's theme and marketing overall direction?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So the hours are signed off in July, so then partners can work out their own arrangements for Christmas. And then the central marketing campaign, they again are working on immediately after Christmas. And we got sight of this year's Christmas advert at the... Well, it was really at the beginning of November, and it was shrouded in secrecy, so nobody, certainly in this branch, knew anything about it, and very few people at the centre knew about it as well. So we all saw it at the same time, and we're just delighted by it.
So just in case anybody listening has been on a desert island for the last 3 months, this is the bear and the hare, is that
yes,
how to describe
right.
it?
Yes, that's right, absolutely, the bear and the hare. And you'll know John Nurse has done some amazing campaigns over the last few years, and it's all about thoughtful giving. So it's not necessarily about a product, although we have featured one product in this year's campaign. It's about thinking about who you're buying for and really choosing the right gift for them. And the bear and hare absolutely encapsulates that, because, as you say, the bear is sleeping over the winter, so the bear buys a really thoughtful present of a clock to wake him up because he's never seen Christmas.
And we all go, ah.
Absolutely, tears all round.
So that material then feeds through into in-store marketing, and the Christmas season, I guess, really kicks off at that point in, mid-November?
Yes, absolutely. We put our decorations up around the same time each year. Then the advert comes out, Christmas stationery or the Christmas shop opens, and it all starts, so after half term. And you'll see on the second floor we've got the bear and the hare out, and you can come and have your photograph taken with them, which is great fun. Customers have loved that this year. And we had some bear and hare products that sold out within 24 hours.
You had a bear and hare onesie, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes, and they just flew out.
So clearly a big thumbs up from that point of view. And the Christmas trading period must be critical for John Lewis. I know that as the partnership as a whole is turning over something in the order of £350 million in the week before Christmas.
Yep.
Presumably it's a key week for Cambridge as well.
Absolutely, it's all still to play for. And if you talk to customers and you listen to customers, this is the week when it will all happen. So the buzz today is so different to last week. So I think customers are really leaving it to this last week. I think mainly because there's 2 days next week, so they're still thinking they've got ages yet, so this is a huge week for us. And for all retailers, you know, the month of December is so crucial for all of our success.
And so how does that play out then on the shop floor? You're open for longer hours, and
yes.
presumably you bring temporary staff in as
yes.
well.
We start recruiting our temps in September, so we gradually build that. So part of that is about getting the numbers in, and it's mainly about training them so that when it comes to peak weeks, they're as trained, as confident as our full-term partners. So we've built that resource up. We also ask our part-timers if they want to do any extra hours, and a lot of them do. A lot of the weekenders, their college has finished, so they come in and do extra hours. And we're trading this week till 9 o'clock every night. So that's really helpful for customers to come in, because it is a bit quieter and they really enjoy that quieter shopping time.
Yeah, it provides a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
How much does your headcount go up then once you take those seasonal workers into account?
It depends year on year, but it's roughly in the region of about an extra 100.
On a full-time staff?
Headcount. So we've probably got around 800 heads at the moment.
Right.
So that's including probably an extra 100 for temps.
Okay, so that gives us an idea
yeah.
of the scale of the
yeah.
ramping up operation.
Absolutely.
Do you find there's a rhythm to your trading? You've mentioned late night openings.
Yeah.
How does it move between weekdays and weekends?
Yeah, the traditional late night on a Wednesday is always very busy. It does take customers a little while to get used to our extended hours, because we start them at the beginning of the middle of November. So that gradually builds. But our weekend trade, obviously a Saturday is our key trading day, and the atmosphere and the buzz in here, the theatre that we create in here, is phenomenal. So to make it enjoyable, and we think it's enjoyable, we will add in music and entertainment. So we'll have people playing musical instruments in the basement, and that music travels up to the first floor. We have, in fact, this weekend we had a couple of our partners singing, and that went down really well with customers. We had customers dancing in women's wear. It was so good.
And are you at all interested in campaigning to increase Sunday trading hours, or do you think that balance works quite well at the moment?
I think for us it works well. We have the browsing time, which allows customers an extra half an hour to just find their feet, walk around and choose their products. So at 11 o'clock we have every single till open, so they can just make their purchases and then do what they want to do. But for us, no, that it seems fine. But if others in the market wanted to test that, that would be up to them. But for us, it feels absolutely fine.
Okay. And of course, the other big issue in retail is the balance between online and in-store sales. I know that for John Lewis, you talk about an omni-channel experience.
That's right.
What does that actually mean?
It means that you can shop with John Lewis anyway, whether it's in the shop, whether it's online, or whether it's by telephone, or whether it's by your smartphone, you know, while you're out doing something else, or your iPad at home, all of that, it's basically every single way, every shopping channel, because we know customers demand that now. We know a lot of customers go home, they've seen the product in the shop, and they go home in the evening with their iPads on their knee, watching the telly, and they order the product. And if they do it before 7, they can collect it the following day.
We ought to point out that other tablets are available.
Absolutely.
Okay. And online now accounts for about 25% of John Lewis partnership sales, is that right?
That's right. That's grown enormously over the last 10 years, I suppose, and will just grow more and more. But there's still a demand for customers to come and see the physical stock. And that's why I talked about theatre earlier, because when they come into the shop, we have to make it worth their while, and we do that via the product, we do it via the music, anything we can add like that. But obviously the biggest difference between online and in store is customer service, so that's where we can make a real difference to shopping experience.
And in addition to the customer service dimension to this, which John Lewis is renowned for, there is also your famous trading promise.
Right.
Never knowingly undersold. Now that phrase has been around since the 1920s. If you were to translate that into 21st century marketing speak, how would you position it?
I would position that in terms of, you can trust John Lewis to be the cheapest on the high street. It's as simple as that. So if you find something that you've bought from us cheaper somewhere else, we will match the price and we will reduce the price of the stock in the shop. It's as simple as that, and customers trust us to do that. And we're constantly checking prices, but we also encourage customers to tell us as well, because we are committed to that promise.
Okay, well, it's good to hear the official take on that. Last question, really. John Lewis Cambridge started as Robert Sale.
Mm.
Robert Sale opened in March 1840 as his draper's store.
Yep.
You've traded without interruption since then. The physical premises on St Andrew Street closed for what,
3 years.
3 years, yep. Relocated to the Grafton,
yep.
Came back in 2007. Yep. Do you think you're going to be around to, let's say, 2140?
I would hope so. We've got every reason that we should be. Our customers love us being here. They love the fact that we're in the city centre, that we're easily accessible, and they love the breadth of the product that we have. So we are absolutely confident we'll be here then.
Great. And what are your top tips for people who are heading for this January sales?
Come in early. Have a really good think about what you want to buy. Do your homework first, have your coffee first as well, and then be patient in the queues, because it will be busy. We're expecting a really great clearance this year.
In Your Company, we'll be back in the new year, when we'll be looking at the contribution that the arts sector makes to the Cambridge business scene. But in the meantime, if you have any questions or feedback, please email us. Our address is inyourcompany@cambridge105.fm. And you can also follow us on Twitter at In Your Company. All previous editions of In Your Company are available as podcasts on the Cambridge 105 website. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of the festive break. Goodbye.